So Ebon would have loosed a shaft at it, but the squire stopped him. A bird's well out of bowshot. I don't like it watching us. The squire shrugged. Nor me, but you won't stop it. Only waste a good arrow. Corran sat in his saddle, studying the eagle for a long time. We press on, he said finally. The rangers resumed their descent. Ghost! John wanted to shout. Where are you? He was about to follow Corran and the others when he glimpsed a flash of white between two boulders. A patch of old snow, he thought, until he saw it stir. He was off his horse at once. As he went to his knees, Ghost lifted his head. His neck glistened wetly, but he made no sound when John peeled off a glove and touched him. The talons had torn a bloody path through fur and flesh, but the bird had not been able to snap his neck. Corran Halfhand was standing over him. "All bad." As if in answer, Ghost struggled to his feet. "The wolf is strong," the ranger said. "Ebon, water. Stone Snake, your skin of wine. Hold him still, John." Together they washed the caked blood from the direwolf's fur. Ghost struggled and bared his teeth when Corran poured the wine into the ragged red gashes the eagle had left, but John wrapped his arms around him and murmured soothing words, and soon enough the wolf quieted. By the time they'd ripped a strip of John's cloak to wrap the wounds, full dark had settled. Only a dusting of stars set the black of sky apart from the black of stone. "Do we press on?" Stone Snake wanted to know. Corran went to his garron. "Back, not on." "Back?" John was taken by surprise. "Eagles have sharper eyes than men. We are seen, so now we run." The half-hand wound a long black scarf around his face and swung up into the saddle. The other rangers exchanged a look, but no man thought to argue. One by one, they mounted and turned their mounts toward home. "Ghost, come," he called, and the direwolf followed, a pale shadow moving through the night. All night they rode, feeling their way up the twisting path and through the stretches of broken ground. The wind grew stronger. Sometimes it was so dark that they dismounted and went ahead on foot, each man leading his garron. Once Ebon suggested that some torches might serve them well, but Corran said, "No fire," and that was the end of that. They reached the stone bridge at the summit and began to descend again. Off in the darkness, a shadow cat screamed in fury, its voice bouncing off the rocks, so it seemed as though a dozen other cats were giving answer. Once John thought he saw a pair of glowing eyes on a ledge overhead, as big as harvest moons. In the black hour before dawn, they stopped to let the horses drink and fed them each a handful of oats and a twist or two of hay. "We are not far from the place the wildlings died," said Corran. "From there, one man could hold 100. The right man?" He looked at Squire Dawbridge. The squire bowed his head. "Leave me as many arrows as you can spare, brothers." He stroked his longbow. "And see my garron as an apple when you're home. He's earned it, poor beastie."
"He's staying to die," John realized. Corran clasped the squire's forearm with a gloved hand.
"If the eagle flies down for a look at you, he'll sprout some new feathers."
The last John saw of Squire Dawbridge was his back as he clambered up the narrow path to the heights. When dawn broke, John looked up into a cloudless sky and saw a speck moving through the blue. Ebon saw it too and cursed, but Corran told him to be quiet.
"Listen."
John held his breath and heard it. Far away and behind them, the call of a hunting horn echoed against the mountains.
"And now they come," said Corran.
Tyrion. Pod dressed him for his ordeal in a plush velvet tunic of Lannister crimson and brought him his chain of office. Tyrion left it on the bedside table. His sister misliked being reminded that he was the king's hand, and he did not wish to inflame the relations between them any further. Varys caught up with him as he was crossing the yard.
"My lord," he said, a little out of breath, "you had best read this at once."
He held out a parchment in a soft white hand.
"A report from the north."
"Good news or bad?" Tyrion asked.
"That is not for me to judge."
Tyrion unrolled the parchment. He had to squint to read the words in the torchlit yard.
"Gods be good," he said softly. "Both of them?"
"I fear so, my lord. It's so sad, so grievous sad. And them so young and innocent."
Tyrion remembered how the wolves had howled when the Stark boy had fallen.
"Are they howling now, I wonder?"
"Have you told anyone else?" he asked.
"Not as yet, though of course I must."
He rolled up the letter.
"I'll tell my sister."
He wanted to see how she took the news. He wanted that very much. The queen looked especially lovely that night. She wore a low-cut gown of deep green velvet that brought out the color of her eyes. Her golden hair tumbled over her bare shoulders, and around her waist was a woven belt studded with emeralds. Tyrion waited until he had been seated and served a cup of wine before thrusting the letter at her. He said not a word. Cersei blinked at him innocently and took the parchment from his hand.
"I trust you're pleased," he said as she read. "You wanted the Stark boy dead, I believe."
Cersei made a sour face. "It was Jaime who threw him from that window, not me." "For love," he said, as if that would please me. "It was a stupid thing to do, and dangerous besides. But when did our sweet brother ever stop to think?"
"The boy saw you,"
Tyrion pointed out.
"He was a child. I could have frightened him into silence."
She looked at the letter thoughtfully. "Why must I suffer accusations every time some Stark stubs his toe? This was Greyjoy's work. I had nothing to do with it."
"Let us hope Lady Catelyn believes that."
Her eyes widened. "She wouldn't..."
"Kill Jaime? Why not? What would you do if Joffrey and Tommen were murdered?"
"I still hold Sansa," the queen declared.
"We still hold Sansa," he corrected her, "and we had better take good care of her. Now, where is this supper you've promised me, sweet sister?"
Cersei set a tasty table. That could not be denied. They started with a creamy chestnut soup, crusty hot bread, and greens dressed with apples and pine nuts. Then came lamprey pie, honeyed ham, buttered carrots, white beans and bacon, and roast swan stuffed with mushrooms and oysters. Tyrion was exceedingly courteous. He offered his sister the choice portions of every dish and made certain he ate only what she did. Not that he truly thought she'd poison him, but it never hurt to be careful. The news about the Starks had soured her, he could see. "We've had no news from Bitterbridge," she asked anxiously, as she speared a bit of apple on the point of her dagger and ate it with small, delicate bites.
"None."
"I've never trusted Littlefinger. For enough coin, he'd go over to Stannis in a heartbeat."
"Stannis Baratheon is too bloody righteous to buy men. Nor would he make a comfortable lord for the likes of Pataya. This war has made for some queer bedfellows, I agree, but those two, no."
As he carved some slices off the ham, she said, "We have Lady Tander to thank for the pig.
A token of her love,
a bribe. She begs leave to return to her castle, your leave as well as mine. I suspect she fears your arrest on the road, as you did Lord Giles."
"Does she plan to make off with the heir to the throne?"
Tyrion served his sister a cut of ham and took one for himself.
"I'd sooner she remain. If she wants to feel safe, tell her to bring down her garrison from Stokeworth, as many men as she has."
"If we need men so badly, why did you send away your savages?" A certain testiness crept into Cersei's voice.
"It was the best use I could have made of them," he told her truthfully. "They're fierce warriors, but not soldiers. In formal battle, discipline is more important than courage. They've already done us more good in the King's Wood than they would ever have done us on the city walls."
As the swan was being served, the queen questioned him about the conspiracy of the antler men. She seemed more annoyed than afraid. Why are we plagued with so many treasons? What injury has House Lannister ever done these wretches?
None, said Tyrion. But they think to be on the winning side, which makes them fools as well as traitors.
Are you certain you found them all?
Varys says so.
The swan was too rich for his taste. A line appeared on Cersei's pale white brow between those lovely eyes. You put too much trust in that eunuch.
He serves me well.
Or so he'd have you believe. You think you're the only one he whispers secrets to? He gives each of us just enough to convince us that we'd be helpless without him. He played the same game with me when I first wed Robert. For years I was convinced I had no truer friend at court. But now...
She studied his face for a moment. He says you mean to take the hound from Joffrey.
Damn Varys.
I need Clegane for more important duties.
Nothing is more important than the life of the king.
The life of the king is not at risk. Joff will have brave Sir Osmond guarding him, and Meryn Trant as well.
Are they good for nothing better?
I need Balon Swan and Hound to lead sorties, to make certain Stannis gets no toehold on our side of the Blackwater.
Jaime would lead the sorties himself.
From River Run? That's quite a sortie.
Joff's only a boy.
A boy who wants to be part of this battle, and for once he's showing some sense. I don't intend to put him in the thick of the fighting, but he needs to be seen. Men fight more fiercely for a king who shares their peril than one who hides behind his mother's skirts.
He's 13, Tyrion.
Remember Jaime at 13? If you want the boy to be his father's son, let him play the part. Joff wears the finest armor gold can buy, and he'll have a dozen gold cloaks around him at all times. If the city looks to be in the least danger of falling, I'll have him escorted back to the Red Keep at once.
He had thought that might reassure her, but he saw no sign of pleasure in those green eyes.
Will the city fall?
No.
But if it does, I pray that we can hold the Red Keep long enough for our Lord Father to march to our relief.
You've lied to me before, Tyrion.
Always with good reason, sweet sister. I want amity between us as much as you do. I've decided to release Lord Giles. He had kept Giles safe for just this gesture. You can have Sir Burras Blunt back as well.
The Queen's mouth tightened. Sir Burras can rot at Rosby, she said. But Tommen
stays where he is. He's safer under Lord Jaslyn's protection than he would ever have been with Lord Giles.
Serving men cleared away the swan, hardly touched. Cersei beckoned for the suite. I hope you like blackberry tarts.
I love all sorts of tarts.
Oh, I've known that a long while. Do you know why Varys is so dangerous?
Are we playing at riddles now?
No. He doesn't have a cock.
Neither do you.
And don't you just hate that, Cersei? Perhaps I'm dangerous, too. You, on the other hand, are as big a fool as every other man. That worm between your legs does half your thinking. Tyrion licked the crumbs off his fingers. He did not like his sister's smile.
Yes, and just now, my worm is thinking that perhaps it is time I took my leave.
Are you unwell, brother? She leaned forward, giving him a good look at the top of her breasts.
Suddenly you appear somewhat flustered.
Flustered? Tyrion glanced at the door. He thought he'd heard something outside. He was beginning to regret coming here alone.
You've never shown much interest in my cock before.
It's not your cock that interests me so much as what you stick it in. I don't depend on the eunuch for everything as you do. I have my own ways of finding out things, especially things that people don't want me to know.
What are you trying to say?
Only this. I have your little whore. Tyrion reached for his wine cup, buying a moment to gather his thoughts.
I thought men were more to your taste.
Oh, you're such a droll little fellow. Tell me, have you married this one yet? When he gave her no answer, she laughed and said, Father will be ever so relieved. His belly felt as if it were full of eels. How had she found Shay? Had Varys betrayed him? Or had all his precautions been undone by his impatience the night he rode directly to the manse? Why should you care who I choose to warm my bed? A Lannister always pays his debt, she said. You've been scheming against me since the day you came to King's Landing. You sold Myrcella, stole Tommen, and now you plot to have Joff killed. You want him dead, so you can rule through Tommen.
Well, I can't say that notion isn't tempting. This is madness, Cersei. Stannis will be here in days. You need me.
For what? Your great prowess in battle?
Bronze cell swords will never fight without me, he lied.
Oh, I think they will. It's your goal they love, not your impish wit. Have no fear, though. They won't be without you. I won't say I haven't thought of slitting your throat from time to time, but Jaime would never forgive me if I did.
And the whore?
He would not call her by name.
If I can convince her she means nothing to me, perhaps...
She'll be treated gently enough, so long as no harm comes to my sons. If Joff should be killed, however, or if Tommen should fall into the hands of our enemies, your little cunt will die more painfully than you can possibly imagine.
She truly believes I mean to kill my own nephew.
The boys are safe, he promised her wearily.
Gods be good, Cersei, they're my own blood. What sort of man do you take me for?
A small and twisted one. Tyrion stared at the dregs on the bottom of his wine cup.
What would Jaime do in my place? Kill the bitch, most likely, and worry about the consequences afterward.
But Tyrion did not have a golden sword, nor the skill to wield one. He loved his brother's reckless wrath, but it was their Lord Father he must try and emulate.
Stone. I must be stone. I must be Casterly rock, hard and unmovable. If I fail this test, I had as lief seek out the nearest grotesquerie.
For all I know, you've killed her already, he said. Would you like to see her? I thought you might. Cersei crossed the room and threw open the heavy oaken door. Bring in my brother's whore. Sir Osmond's brothers, Osney and Osfred, were peas from the same pod, tall men with hooked noses, dark hair, and cruel smiles. She hung between them, eyes wide and white in her dark face. Blood trickled from her broken lip, and he could see bruises through her torn clothing. Her hands were bound with rope, and they'd gagged her so she could not speak.
You said she wouldn't be hurt.
She fought. Unlike his brothers, Osney Kettleblack was clean-shaven, so the scratches showed plainly on his bare cheeks.
Got claws like a shadow cat, this one.
Bruises heal, said Cersei in a bored tone. The whore will live, so long as Joff does. Tyrion wanted to laugh at her. It would have been so sweet, so very sweet. But it would have given the game away. You've lost, Cersei.
And the Kettleblacks are even bigger fools than Bronn claimed.
All he needed to do was say the words. Instead, he looked at the girl's face and said, You swear you'll release her after the battle? If you release Tommen, yes. He pushed himself to his feet.
Keep her then, but keep her safe. If these animals think they can use her, well, sweet sister, let me point out that a scale tips two ways.
His tone was calm, flat, uncaring. He'd reached for his father's voice and found it.
Whatever happens to her, happens to Tommen as well. And that includes the beatings and rapes. If she thinks me such a monster, I'll play the part for her.
Cersei had not expected that. You would not dare. Tyrion made himself smile, slow and cold. Green and black, his eyes laughed at her.
Dare? I'll do it myself.
His sister's hand flashed at his face, but he caught her wrist and bent it back until she cried out. Osfred moved to her rescue.
One more step, and I'll break her arm.
The dwarf warned him. The man stopped. You remember when I said you'd never hit me again, Cersei? He shoved her to the floor and turned back to the kettleblacks. Untie her and remove that gag. The rope had been so tight as to cut off the blood to her hands. She cried out in pain as the circulation returned. Tyrion massaged her fingers gently until feeling returned. Sweetling, he said, you must be brave. I am sorry they hurt you. I know you'll free me, my lord.
I will, he promised. And Alayaya bent over and kissed him on the brow. Her broken lip left a smear of blood on his forehead. A bloody kiss is more than I deserve, Tyrion thought. She would never have been hurt but for me. Her blood still marked him as he looked down at the queen. I have never liked you, Cersei, but you were my own sister, so I never did you harm. You've ended that. I will hurt you for this. I don't know how yet, but give me time. A day will come when you think yourself safe and happy, and suddenly your joy will turn to ashes in your mouth, and you'll know the debt is paid. In war, his father had told him once, the battle is over in the instant one army breaks and flees. No matter that they're as numerous as they were a moment before, still armed and armored, once they had run before you, they would not turn to fight again. So it was with Cersei. Get out, was all the answer she could summon. Get out of my sight. Tyrion bowed. Good night, then, and pleasant dreams. He made his way back to the Tower of the Hand, with 1,000 armored feet marching through his skull. I ought to have seen this coming the first time I slipped through the back of Shataya's wardrobe. Perhaps he had not wanted to see. His legs were aching badly by the time he had made the climb. He sent Pod for a flagon of wine and pushed his way into his bedchamber. Shay sat cross-legged in the canopied bed, nude but for the heavy golden chain that looped across the swell of her breasts. A chain of linked golden hands, each clasping the next. Tyrion had not expected her. What are you doing here? Laughing, she stroked the chain. I wanted some hands on my titties, but these little gold ones are cold. For a moment, he did not know what to say. How could he tell her that another woman had taken the beating meant for her, and might well die in her place, should some mischance of battle fell Joffrey? He wiped Alayaya's blood from his brow with the heel of his hand. The Lady Lullis? She's asleep. Sleeps all she ever wants to do, the great cow. She sleeps and she eats. Sometimes she falls asleep while she's eating. The food falls under the blankets and she rolls in it, and I have to clean her. She made a disgusted face. All they did was fuck her. Her mother says she's sick. She has a baby in her belly, that's all. Tyrion gazed around the room. Everything seemed much as he left it. How did you enter? Show me the hidden door. She gave a shrug. Lord Varys made me wear a hood I couldn't see. Except there was one place I got a peep at the floor out of the bottom of the hood. It was all tiles, you know, the kind that make a picture. A mosaic, she nodded. They were coloured, red and black. I think the picture was a dragon. Otherwise, everything was dark. We went down a ladder and walked a long ways until I was all twisted about. Once we stopped so he could unlock an iron gate, I brushed against it when we went through. The dragon was past the gate. Then we went up another ladder with a tunnel at the top. I had to stoop, and I think Lord Varys was crawling.
Tyrion made a round of the bedchamber. One of the sconces looked loose. He stood on his toes and tried to turn it. It revolved slowly, scraping against the stone wall. When it was upside down, the stub of the candle fell out. The rushes, scattered across the cold stone floor, did not show any particular disturbance.
"Doesn't my lord want to bed me?" asked Shay.
"In a moment." Tyrion threw open his wardrobe, shoving his clothing aside, and pushed against the rear panel. What worked for a whorehouse might work for a castle as well. But no, the wood was solid, unyielding. A stone beside the window seat drew his eye, but all his tugging and prodding went for naught. He returned to the bed, frustrated and annoyed. Shay undid his laces and threw her arms around his neck.
"Your shoulders feel as hard as rocks," she murmured. "Hurry, I want to feel you inside me."
Yet as her legs locked around his waist, his manhood left him. When she felt him go soft, Shay slid down under the sheets and took him in her mouth. But even that could not rouse him. After a few moments, he stopped her.
"What's wrong?"
she asked. All the sweet innocence of the world was written there in the lines of her young face.
"Innocence? Fool. She's a whore. Cersei was right. You think with your cock. Fool. Fool."
"Just go to sleep, sweetling," he urged, stroking her hair. Yet long after Shay had taken his advice, Tyrion himself still lay awake, his fingers cupped over one small breast as he listened to her breathing. Catelyn. The great hall of Riverrun was a lonely place for two to sit at supper. Deep shadows draped the walls. One of the torches had guttered out, leaving only three. Catelyn sat staring into her wine goblet. The vintage tasted thin and sour on her tongue. Brienne was across from her. Between them, her father's high seat was as empty as the rest of the hall. Even the servants were gone. She had given them leave to join the celebration. The walls of the keep were thick, yet even so, they could hear the muffled sounds of revelry from the yard outside. Sir Desmond had brought 20 casks up from the cellars, and the small folk were celebrating Edmure's imminent return and Rob's conquest of the crag by hoisting horns of nut-brown ale. "I cannot blame them," Catelyn thought. "They do not know. And if they did, why should they care? They never knew my sons, never watched Bran climb with their hearts in their throats, pride and terror so mingled they seemed to be as one. Never heard him laugh, never smiled to see Rickon trying so fiercely to be like his older brothers." She stared at the supper set before her, trout wrapped in bacon, salad of turnip greens and red fennel and sweet grass, peas and onions and hot bread. Brienne was eating methodically, as if supper were another chore to be accomplished. "I am become a sour woman," Catelyn thought. "I take no joy in mead nor meat, and song and laughter have become suspicious strangers to me. I am a creature of grief and dust and bitter longings. There is an empty place within me where my heart was once." The sound of the other woman's eating had become intolerable to her. "Brienne, I am no fit company. Go join the revels if you would. Drink a horn of ale and dance to Ryman's harping."
"I'm not made for revels, my lady."
Her big hands tore apart a heel of black bread. Brienne stared at the chunks as if she had forgotten what they were.
"If you command it, I..."
Catelyn could sense her discomfort. "I only thought you might enjoy a happier company than mine."
"I'm well content."
The girl used the bread to sup up some of the bacon grease the trout had been fried in. "There was another bird this morning." Catelyn did not know why she said it. "The maester woke me at once. That was dutiful, but not kind. Not kind at all." She had not meant to tell Brienne. No one knew but her and Maester Wyman, and she had meant to keep it that way until...
Until what, foolish woman? Will holding it secret in your heart make it any less true? If you never tell, never speak of it, will it become only a dream? Less than a dream? A nightmare half remembered? Oh, if only the gods would be so good.
"Is it news of King's Landing?"
asked Brian. Would that it was. The bird came from Castle Serwyn, from Sir Roderick, my castellan.
Dark wings, dark words.
He has gathered what power he could and is marching on Winterfell to take the castle back. How unimportant all that sounded now. But he said, he wrote, he told me,
my lady, what is it? Is it some news of your sons?
Such a simple question that was. Would that the answer could be as simple. When Catelyn tried to speak, the words caught in her throat. I have no sons but Rob. She managed those terrible words without a sob. For that much she was glad. Brian looked at her with horror.
My lady.
Bran and Rickon tried to escape, but were taken at a mill on the Acorn Water. Theon Greyjoy has mounted their heads on the walls of Winterfell. Theon Greyjoy, who ate at my table since he was a boy of 10. I have said it. Gods, forgive me. I have said it and made it true. Brienne's face was a watery blur. She reached across the table, but her fingers stopped short of Catelyn's, as if the touch might be unwelcome. There are no words, my lady, my good lady. Your sons, they're with the gods now. Are they? Catelyn said sharply. What god would let this happen? Rickon was only a baby. How could he deserve such a death? And Bran, when I left the north, he had not opened his eyes since his fall. I had to go before he woke. Now I can never return to him or hear him laugh again. She showed Brian her palms, her fingers. These scars. They send a man to cut Bran's throat as he lay sleeping. He would have died then, and me with him. But Bran's wolf tore out the man's throat. That gave her a moment's pause. I suppose Theon killed the wolves, too. He must have, elsewise. I was certain the boys would be safe so long as the dire wolves were with them, like Rob with his grey wind. But my daughters have no wolves now. The abrupt shift of topic left Brienne bewildered. Your daughters? Sansa was a lady at 3, always so courteous and eager to please. She loved nothing so well as tales of knightly valour. Men would say she had my look. But she will grow into a woman far more beautiful than I ever was. You can see that. I often sent away her maid so I could brush her hair myself. She had auburn hair, lighter than mine, and so thick and soft. The red in it would catch the light of the torches and shine like copper. And Arya, well, Ned's visitors would oft mistake her for a stable boy if they rode into the yard unannounced. Arya was a trial, it must be said. Half a boy and half a wolf pup. Forbid her anything, and it became her heart's desire. She had Ned's long face and brown hair that always looked as though a bird had been nesting in it. I despaired of ever making a lady of her. She collected scabs as other girls collect dolls, and would say anything that came into her head. I think she must be dead, too. When she said that, it felt as though a giant hand was squeezing her chest. I want them all dead, Brienne. Theon Greyjoy first, then Jaime Lannister and Cersei and the Imp. Every one, every one. My girls will...
The Queen, she has a little girl of her own, Brian said awkwardly, and sons too of an age with yours. When she hears, perhaps she may take pity and
send my daughters back unharmed.
Catelyn smiled sadly.
There is a sweet innocence about you, child. I could wish, but no. Rob will avenge his brothers. Ice can kill as dead as fire. Ice was Ned's greatsword, Valyrian steel marked with the ripples of 1,000 foldings, so sharp I feared to touch it. Rob's blade is dull as a cudgel compared to Ice. It will not be easy for him to get Theon's head off, I fear. The Starks do not use headsmen. Ned always said that the man who passes the sentence should swing the blade, though he never took any joy in the duty. But I would. Oh, yes. She stared at her scarred hands, opened and closed them, then slowly raised her eyes. I've sent him wine.
Wine? Brian was lost. Rob? Or Theon Greyjoy?
The Kingslayer. The ploy had worked well with Cleos Frey. I hope you're thirsty, Jamie. I hope your throat is dry and tight. I would like you to come with me.
I'm yours to command, my lady.
Good. Catelyn rose abruptly. Stay, finish your meal in peace. I will send for you later, at midnight.
So late, my lady?
The dungeons are windowless. 1 hour is much like another down there. And for me, all hours are midnight. Her footsteps rang hollowly when Catelyn left the hall. As she climbed to Lord Huster's solar, she could hear them outside shouting, Tully! And a cup to the brave young lord! My father is not dead, she wanted to shout down at them. My sons are dead, but my father lives. Damn you all! And he is your lord still. Lord Huster was deep in sleep.
He had a cup of dream wine not so long ago, my lady,
Maester Vyman said,
for the pain. He will not know you are here.
It makes no matter, Catelyn said. He's more dead than alive, yet more alive than my poor sweet sons.
My lady, is there aught I might do for you? A sleeping draught, perhaps?
Thank you, Maester, but no. I will not sleep away my grief. Bran and Rickon deserve better from me. Go and join the celebration. I will sit with my father for a time.
As you will, my lady.
Vyman bowed and left her. Lord Huster lay on his back, mouth open, his breath a faint whistling sigh. One hand hung over the edge of the mattress, a pale, frail, fleshless thing, but warm when she touched it. She slid her fingers through his and closed them.
No matter how tightly I hold him, I cannot keep him here, she thought sadly. Let him go.
Yet her fingers would not seem to unbend. I have no one to talk with, Father, she told him. I pray, but the gods do not answer. Lightly she kissed his hand. The skin was warm, blue veins branching like rivers beneath his pale, translucent skin. Outside, the greater rivers flowed, the Red Fork and the Tumblestone, and they would flow forever. But not so the rivers of her father's hand. Too soon, that current would grow still. Last night, I dreamed of that time Lysa and I got lost while riding back from Seagar. Do you remember? That strange fog came up, and we fell behind the rest of the party. Everything was grey, and I could not see a foot past the nose of my horse. We lost the road. The branches of the trees were like long, skinny arms reaching out to grab us as we passed. Lysa started to cry, and when I shouted, the fog seemed to swallow the sound. But Patar knew where we were, and he rode back and found us. But there's no one to find me now, is there? This time, I have to find my own way. And it is hard. So hard. I keep remembering the Stark words. Winter has come, Father. For me. For me. Rob must fight the Greyjoys now as well as the Lannisters. And for what? For a gold hat and an iron chair? Surely the land has bled enough. I want my girls back. I want Rob to lay down his sword and pick some homely daughter of Walder Frey to make him happy and give him sons.
I want Bran and Rickard back. I want... Catelyn hung her head. I want... She said once more,
and then her words were gone. After a time, the candle guttered and went out. Moonlight slanted between the slats of the shutters, laying pale, silvery bars across her father's face. She could hear the soft whisper of his labored breathing, the endless rush of waters, the faint chords of some love song drifting up from the yard, so sad and sweet.
I loved a maid as red as autumn,
Ryman sang,
with sunset in her hair.
Catelyn never noticed when the singing ended. Hours had passed, yet it seemed only a heartbeat before Brian was at the door.
My lady, she announced softly, midnight has come.
Midnight has come, father, she thought, and I must do my duty. She let go of his hand. The jailer was a furtive little man with broken veins in his nose. They found him bent over a tankard of ale and the remains of a pigeon pie, more than a little drunk. He squinted at them suspiciously.
Begging your forgiveness, my lady, but Lord Edmure says no one is to see the Kingslayer without a writing from him, with his seal upon it.
Lord Edmure? Has my father died, and no one told me? The jailer licked his lips.
No, my lady, not as I knows.
You will open the cell, or you will come with me to Lord Huster Solar and tell him why you saw fit to defy me. His eyes fell.
As my lady says.
The keys were chained to the studded leather belt that girdled his waist. He muttered under his breath as he sorted through them, until he found the one that fit the door to the Kingslayer's cell. Go back your ale and leave us, she commanded. An oil lamp hung from a hook on the low ceiling. Catelyn took it down and turned up the flame. Brian, see that I'm not disturbed. Nodding, Brian took up a position just outside the cell, her hand resting on the pommel of her sword.
My lady will call if she has need of me.
Catelyn shouldered aside the heavy wood and iron door, and stepped into foul darkness. This was the bowels of River Run, and smelled the part. Old straw crackled underfoot. The walls were discolored with patches of nitre. Through the stone, she could hear the faint rush of the tumblestone. The lamplight revealed a pail overflowing with feces in one corner, and a huddled shape in another. The flagon of wine stood beside the door, untouched. So much for that ploy. I ought to be thankful that the jailer did not drink it himself, I suppose. Jamie raised his hands to cover his face, the chains around his wrists clanking.
Lady Stark,
he said, in a voice hoarse with disuse,
I fear I am in no condition to receive you.
Look at me, sir.
The light hurts my eyes. A moment, if you would.
Jamie Lannister had been allowed no razor since the night he was taken in the Whispering Wood, and a shaggy beard covered his face, once so like the Queen's. Glinting gold in the lamplight, the whiskers made him look like some great yellow beast, magnificent even in chains. His unwashed hair fell to his shoulders in ropes and tangles. The clothes were rotting on his body. His face was pale and wasted. And even so, the power and the beauty of the man was still apparent. I see you have no taste for the wine I sent you. Such sudden generosity seems somewhat suspect. I can have your head off any time I want. Why would I need to poison you? Death by poison can seem natural. Harder to claim that my head simply fell off. He squinted up from the floor, his cat-green eyes slowly becoming accustomed to the light. I'd invite you to sit, but your brother has neglected to provide me a chair. I can stand well enough. Can you? You look terrible, I must say. Though perhaps it's just the light in here. He was fettered at wrist and ankle, each cuff chained to the others, so that he could neither stand nor lie comfortably. The ankle chains were bolted to the wall. Are my bracelets heavy enough for you?
or did you come to add a few more? I'll rattle them prettily if you like. You brought this on yourself, she reminded him. We granted you the comfort of a tower cell befitting your birth and station. You repaid us by trying to escape. A cell is a cell. Some on the Castle Rock make this one seem a sunlit garden. One day, perhaps, I'll show them to you. If he is cowed, he hides it well, Catelyn thought. A man chained hand and foot should keep a more courteous tongue in his mouth, sir. I did not come here to be threatened. No? Then surely it was to have your pleasure of me. It's said that widows grow weary of their empty beds. We of the King's Guard vow never to wed. But I suppose I could still service you, if that's what you need. Pour us some of that wine and slip out of that gown, and we'll see if I'm up to it. Catelyn stared down at him in revulsion. Was there ever a man as beautiful or as vile as this one? If you said that in my son's hearing, he would kill you for it. Only so long as I was wearing these, Jamie Lannister rattled his chains at her. We both know the boy is afraid to face me in single combat. My son may be young, but if you take him for a fool, you're sadly mistaken. And it seems to me that you are not so quick to make challenges when you had an army at your back. Did the old kings of Winter hide behind their mother's skirts as well? I grow weary of this, sir. There are things I must know. Why should I tell you anything? To save your life. You think I fear death? That seemed to amuse him. You should. Your crimes will have earned you a place of torment in the deepest of the seven hells, if the gods are just. What gods are those, Lady Catelyn? The trees your husband prayed to? How well did they serve him when my sister took his head off? Jamie gave a chuckle. If there are gods, why is the world so full of pain and injustice? Because of men like you. There are no men like me. There's only me. There is nothing here but arrogance and pride, and the empty courage of a madman. I'm wasting my breath with this one. If there was ever a spark of honor in him, it is long dead. If you will not speak with me, so be it. Drink the wine, or piss in it, sir. It makes no matter to me. Her hand was at the door pull when he said, Lady Stark. She turned, waited. Things go to rust in this damp, Jamie went on. Even a man's courtesies. Stay, and you shall have your answers. For a price. He has no shame. Captives do not set prices. Oh, you'll find mine modest enough. Your turnkey tells me nothing but vile lies, and he cannot even keep them straight. One day he says, Cersei has been flayed, and the next it's my father. Answer my questions, and I'll answer yours. Truthfully? Oh, it's truth you want. Oh, be careful, my lady. Tyrion says that people often claim to hunger for truth, but seldom like the taste when it's served up. I am strong enough to hear anything you care to say. As you will, then. But first, if you'd be so kind, the wine. My throat is raw. Catelyn hung the lamp from the door and moved the cup and flagon closer. Jamie slushed the wine around his mouth before he swallowed. Sour and vile, he said, but it will do. He put his back to the wall, drew up his knees to his chest, and stared at her. Your first question, Lady Catelyn. Not knowing how long this game might continue, Catelyn wasted no time. Are you Joffrey's father? You would never ask that unless you knew the answer. I want it from your own lips. He shrugged. Joffrey is mine, as are the rest of Cersei's brood, I suppose. You admit to being your sister's lover? I've always loved my sister, and you owe me two answers. Do all my kin still live? Sir Stafford Lannister was slain at Oxcross, I'm told. Jamie was unmoved. Uncle Dolt, my sister called him. It's Cersei and Tyrion who concern me, as well as my lord father.
They live, all three, but not long, if the gods are good. Jaime drank some more wine. Ask your next. Catelyn wondered if he would dare answer her next question with anything but a lie. How did my son Bran come to fall? I flung him from a window. The easy way he said it took her voice away for an instant. If I had a knife, I would kill him now, she thought, until she remembered the girls. Her throat constricted as she said, You were a knight, sworn to defend the weak and innocent. He was weak enough, but perhaps not so innocent. He was spying on us. Bran would not spy. Then blame those precious gods of yours who brought the boy to our window and gave him a glimpse of something he was never meant to see. Blame the gods? She said, incredulous. Yours was the hand that threw him. You meant for him to die. His chains chinked softly. I seldom fling children from towers to improve their health. Yes, I meant for him to die. And when he did not, you knew your danger was worse than ever, so you gave your cat's paw a bag of silver to make certain Bran would never wake. Did I now? Jaime lifted his cup and took a long swallow. I won't deny we talked of it, but you were with the boy, day and night. Your maester and Lord Eddard attended him frequently, and there were guards, even those damned direwolves. It would have required cutting my way through half of Winterfell. And why bother, when the boy seemed like to die of his own accord? If you lie to me, this session is at an end. Catelyn held out her hands to show him her fingers and palms. The man who came to slit Bran's throat gave me these scars. You swear you had no part in sending him? On my honor as a Lannister. Your honor as a Lannister is worth less than this. She kicked over the waste pail. Foul-smelling brown ooze crept across the floor of the cell, soaking into the straw. Jaime Lannister backed away from the spill as far as his chains would allow. I may indeed have shit for honor, I won't deny it, but I've never yet hired anyone to do my killing. Believe what you will, Lady Stark, but if I had wanted your Bran dead, I would have slain him myself. Gods be merciful. He's telling the truth. If you did not send the killer, your sister did. If so, I'd know. Cersei keeps no secrets from me. Then it was the imp. Tyrion is as innocent as your Bran. He wasn't climbing around outside of anyone's window spying. Then why did the assassin have his dagger? What dagger was this? It was so long, she said, holding her hands apart. Plain but finely made, with a blade of Valyrian steel and a dragonbone hilt. Your brother won it from Lord Baelish at the tourney on Prince Joffrey's name day. Lannister poured, drank, poured, and stared into his wine cup. This wine seems to be improving as I drink it. Imagine that. I seem to remember that dagger, now that you describe it. Won it, you say? How? Wagering on you when you tilted against the Knight of Flowers. Yet when she heard her own words, Catelyn knew she had gotten it wrong. No, was it the other way? Tyrion always backed me in the lists, Jaime said. But that day, Sir Loras unhorsed me. A mischance. I took the boy too lightly. But no matter. Whatever my brother wagered, he lost. But that dagger did change hands. I recall it now. Robert showed it to me that night at the feast. His Grace loved to salt my wounds, especially when drunk. And when was he not drunk? Tyrion Lannister had said much the same thing as they rode through the Mountains of the Moon, Catelyn remembered. She had refused to believe him. Pataya had sworn otherwise. Pataya, who had been almost a brother, Pataya, who loved her so much, he fought a duel for her hand. And yet, if Jaime and Tyrion told the same tale, what did that mean? The brothers had not seen each other since departing Winterfell more than a year ago. Are you trying to deceive me? Somewhere there was a trap here. I've admitted to shoving your precious urchin out of a window. What would it gain me to lie about this knife? He tossed down another cup of wine. Believe what you will. I'm past caring what people say of me. And now it's my turn. Have Robert's brothers taken the field? They have. Now, there's a niggardly response. Give me more than that, or your next answer will be as poor. Stannis marches against King's Landing, she said grudgingly. Renly is dead, murdered at Bitterbridge by his brother, through some black art I do not understand. A pity, Jaime said. I'd rather like Renly, though Stannis is quite another tale. What side have the Tyrells taken? Renly at first. Now, I could not say. Your boy must be feeling lonely. Rob was 16 a few days past, a man grown, and a king. He's won every battle he's fought. The last word we had from him, he had taken the crag from the Westerlings. He hasn't faced my father yet, has he? When he does, he'll defeat him, as he did you. He took me unawares, a craven's trick. You dare talk of tricks? Your brother Tyrion sent us cutthroats in envoy's garb under a peace banner. If it were one of your sons in this cell, wouldn't his brothers do as much for him? My son has no brothers, she thought, but she would not share her pain with a creature such as this. Jaime drank some more wine. What's a brother's life when honor is at stake, eh? Another sip. Tyrion is clever enough to realize that your son will never consent to ransom me. Catelyn could not deny it. Rob's bannerman would sooner see you dead, Rickard Carstark in particular. You slew two of his sons in the Whispering Wood. The two with the white sunburst, were there? Jaime gave a shrug. If truth be told, it was your son that I was trying to slay. The others got in my way. I killed them in fair fight in the heat of battle. Any other knight would have done the same. How can you still count yourself a knight when you have forsaken every vow you ever swore? Jaime reached for the flagon to refill his cup. So many vows. They make you swear and swear, defend the king, obey the king, keep his secrets, do his bidding, your life for his, but obey your father, love your sister, protect the innocent, defend the weak, respect the gods, obey the laws. It's too much. No matter what you do, you're forsaking one vow or the other. He took a healthy swallow of wine and closed his eyes for an instant, leaning his head back against the patch of nitre on the wall. I was the youngest man ever to wear the white cloak, and the youngest to betray all it stood for, Kingslayer. Kingslayer, he pronounced it carefully. And such a king he was. He lifted his cup. To Aerys Targaryen, the second of his name, Lord of the Seven Kingdoms and Protector of the Realm. And to the sword that opened his throat. A golden sword, don't you know, until his blood ran red down the blade. Those are the Lannister colors, red and gold. As he laughed, she realized the wine had done its work. Jaime had drained most of the flagon, and he was drunk. Only a man like you would be proud of such an act. I told you, there are no men like me. Answer me this, Lady Stark. Did your Ned ever tell you the manner of his father's death, or his brother's? They strangled Brandon while his father watched, and then killed Lord Rickard as well. An ugly tale. And 16 years old. Why was he asking about it now? Killed, yes, but how? The cord or the axe, I suppose. Jaime took a swallow, wiped his mouth. No doubt Ned wished to spare you, his sweet young bride, if not quite a maiden. Well, you wanted truth. Ask me. We made a bargain. I can deny you nothing. Ask. Dead is dead. I do not want to know this. Brandon was different from his brother, wasn't he? He had blood in his veins instead of cold water. More like me.
Brandon was nothing like you.
If you say so. You and he were to wed.
He was on his way to...